Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Who was the youngest goalkeeper to play in the Premier League? The number one podcast. Hello and welcome to episode 2 of the number one podcast, the football podcast, where we focus on the goalkeeping side of the game. I am Lloyd Griffith, and this is my co-host, former goalkeeper, and now journalist, David Priest. David, how are you?
I'm very well, mate. I'm very stiff, to be honest with you.
You're very stiff?
Very stiff, yeah. No football for me this weekend, so I went boxing.
You went boxing?
Yeah.
You're an absolute animal.
Well, not yet, I'm not, but I will be soon.
You're training to be an animal?
Yeah, I'm just training not to be fat, to be honest with you.
I mean, not something that's ever tickled my fancy, to be fair.
It's slowly creeping up on me, sort of since I stopped playing and I spend more time in front of a computer than I do in a gym. Then it's, I'm slowly expanding.
Playing games on the computer or just...
Oh, no.
On the internet?
Yeah, writing.
Writing, yes. Oh, yeah. Not like that. But that boxing, again, another sport where it's quite solitary, quite... There's a theme emerging, isn't there?
Yeah, and you often take a blow in the face.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah,
and you have to wear gloves.
Gloves, yeah.
Crikey, mate. We will be answering that question later on the show. Who was the youngest goalkeeper to play in the Premier League? Do you know the answer? And we chat.
Well, we did. Yeah, I didn't know the answer at all until you told me. So it's
I'm good at finding stats.
Yeah,
like this,
yeah, it's a good one. This one.
Mate, I love the internet too as well. Often on it on my own. Firstly, a huge thank you to everyone that has listened to the first episode, and thanks for all the nice tweets, the retweets and lovely reviews on iTunes. And we'll also be revealing the winner of the FIFA 18 game later on in the show. Aside from boxing, have you been doing anything else this weekend?
I haven't, no. The snow's sort of kiboshed everything.
Yeah,
really.
I had to cancel 2 gigs this weekend because of the snow, which is a bit annoying. And I got quite an angry tweet from a bloke in Ilkley, which I had to try and smooth over. So apologies if you were expecting me in Ilkley this weekend, but the snow, because I finished soccer M at like 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock on a Saturday, to then get up to Ilkley in 7 hours, I was just a bit worried about it.
It's 7 hours, well.
Well, it isn't 7 hours, but a friend of mine had said, look, it took me like 9 hours to get to Yorkshire from London the other day because of the snow. I thought, I don't want to. I don't want to let anyone down on the day, so...
No, and if you want any more updates on whether roads are free or whether they're any blocked, just join in next week.
Grimsby's game went ahead on Saturday. A lot of postponements on Saturday. Annoyingly, Grimsby's game did go ahead, which meant an inevitable loss, and it did do, but it did. We did lose at the helm of a new manager. We've got Michael Jolly. Do you know much about him?
Yeah, I know a little bit about him. I know he was coaching at Lincoln just before I arrived there, and he went off to do the academy at Burnley. And he took the route that a lot of coaches have taken recently. Yeah. The success of Graham Potter at Ostersunds is, I think it's sort of given everyone a bit of encouragement to go abroad and to get their experience. And I did it myself, obviously, going to Denmark, and it's... It's something that it doesn't matter where you're going, as long as you're just widening or broadening your horizons. And it's a great, Scandinavia is a great place to go and learn your trade.
Yeah, so he was a manager of AFC Eskilstuna, which is a team in Sweden.
Yeah, I'm not too familiar with them.
No, I don't think many people are, to be fair. But I think he's the first manager that Grimsby Town have had where he's got a degree from Cambridge. and has been a merchant banker at HSBC. So it's a different route.
Not a few merchant bankers, are there not?
Oh, well, they've been called that. Something similar in the past. I think we did, actually. There was a lad called Church who was a trader. I think he played for Boston. And mate, that's not what this podcast is about. So we'll be following his success or failure on this podcast, but hopefully it is a success. And one thing I didn't ask you last week, and a few people did tweet in about it, when you were playing, what gloves did you wear?
I wore anything, to be honest with you.
Anything?
I probably wore every brand over the course of the 22 years. But my favourite, I have to say, used to be Roche.
Really?
Now, I don't know whether that's just because it coincided with a time when I was doing all right and I was playing well. And so then, I don't know, it's kind of like a superstition. But the thing is, with gloves, there are no good gloves and bad gloves. No. They're the gloves that suit you and the ones that you find the best. So it's, like I said, I don't think it's a matter of good or bad.
Did you get sent them? Did you get them free?
Well, do you know what? Considering I played at the level that I did, I wasn't sort of, I don't know, people weren't exactly throwing the gloves at me.
They weren't?
No. Probably because they knew I might drop them.
Yes. Yeah. I was going to do that joke, but you got in there before me.
No, but I did, and sort of, when I went to Denmark, the club had a contract with Ullsport.
Ullsport, yeah.
So I had to wear those gloves. So I think I tried every single pair that Ullsport had at the time.
And did you, we talked about you being a bit, you know, your obsession with gloves. Even when you're a goalkeeper, are you still like going to shops, trying them out, like asking other goalkeepers what they're wearing?
Oh, no, I mean, particularly when I played, I mean, it's not so much now, but when I played, yeah, you just want to, all the new ones came in. That never left you. You know, when you're 9, 10 years old, you go to the local sports shop and you're looking at all these gloves that you can't afford and they said trying them all on and you're smelling them. And
it's the smell that gets me. That rubber and latex. It's kind of, I remember when I was a young lad, went shopping to York on a day out from Grimsby. I remember going to this proper old school, you know, like a standalone sports shop, Intersport, but not really. And there was Roche, Peter Schmeichel gloves, and that was it. I was smitten. And it took me about 4 years to raise the money to get them because they were so expensive.
Do you know what? I tried them out and I was so disappointed with those ones and I couldn't catch a thing in them.
Really?
Could not catch a thing in them. That's why I thought Peter Schmeichel must be one hell of a keeper because I don't know what it was.
What do you wear now if you get asked to play?
Oh, you know, I've not worn a pair of gloves for a long time. And this is the thing about coaching. I don't really wear goalkeeper gloves when I'm coaching.
Why?
Well, I don't know. I just seem that in my head, I'm a goalkeeping coach, not a goalkeeper. So I don't wear them. So I tend to wear sort of like, I don't know, like a...
Gardening gloves?
Well, not so much, but like just normal gloves that have got a grip on them. Like Nike do ones that are sort of got a little bit of grip
do you
on
know
them.
What? I saw some Under Armour ones the other week as well. Like, so they've just got little bubbles, haven't they, really?
Yeah. I find them more comfortable. I think there's probably it's maybe a bit too niche for people to make specific goalkeeping coaches gloves. I know there's ones where you've got like a watch inserted in the strap.
Really?
Yeah, so you can sort of keep time of your coaching sessions.
All right, but not for like a goalkeeper wearing them on a pitch.
Well, no, I mean, most clubs have got like a scoreboard waiting to see the time anyway, so you wouldn't really need a watch.
Most clubs.
No. Oh, no, I mean, you might get some hipster goalkeepers who've got like the pocket fob watchers.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's an option.
There's a market for it. Right, let's have a look at what happened this weekend in the cheesily named feature Between the Sticks. Burnley 2, Everton 1. Now, a lot of talking points in this game. Everton went 1-0 up. Cenk Tosun.
Yeah.
Cenk Tosun?
I think is it Cenk?
Cenk Tosun.
I'll go for Cenk anyway.
There's a number of ways you can say it. He scored a decent header against Pope. I don't think Pope could have done anything about it, really.
No, not at all. You're right, it was an interesting one to watch because the two keepers who are maybe not in direct competition for places, I think it's a given that Jordan Pickford's going to be in the World Cup squad, but it was a good chance for to have a direct comparison just during the game and see how they both did. And I think Nick Pope didn't have a great deal to do, but what he did, he just looked so comfortable and so solid and reliable, like, you know. And Jordan, I think he did have a good game, but he came in for a little bit of criticism for the goals that he conceded. And I think there's a couple of reasons for that. I mean, the first goal, I think it's not as cut and dry as what everyone's talking about. You know, I know that he in a similar situation, he came out and he blocked, I think he was putting Ashley Barnes again, same situation, come out, flew out and blocked the shot. And everyone's saying he should have done that first case. But I just think it's such a difficult ball to deal with and to judge, that the fact he did make a decision to steer is fine with me, because as long as you don't get caught in between, if you get caught in two minds and you're caught in no man's land, then that's a wrong decision.
Well, so where it looks like you haven't made that decision and you're panicking, so yeah, we're gone, right, I'm either going to stay here, I'm going to come out straight away. But what he did, he made his mind up, gone, right, I am going to stay here. He didn't panic and get like a few seconds ago, all right, I better look like I'm going to come out and then make more of a melee.
Yeah, and it does look panicked, but the ball is so good by Matt Loughton.
Yeah,
and the angle is coming at, you can see that Michael Keane, the Everton centre half, he kind of makes a sort of motion to go and cut it out, and then realise he can't get there. And I think when you do that, it's sort of to the goalkeeper, he sort of thinks, well, he's going to go across there, I'll steer, and then when he doesn't, there's no time for you to react either. I think possibly in a couple of situations, I remarked at the time, I think Jordan's starting positions were a little bit deep. Right. But when you talk about your starting positions, it's in relation to your defence. And sometimes, I mean, you look at the two centre-halves, they were all over the place all game. And Ashley Williams getting sent off, it epitomises everything that he was, the way he was the whole game. He's just so erratic, and they look like they're really struggling for confidence, the two of them. So that's a big factor in it as well. But for me, if he did make a mistake in that situation, is that he didn't react afterwards. So when the ball's come through and Ashley Barnes arrived, and you can see he's going to hit the ball and he's so close to goal, he's got to do two things. He's either got to go and engage then and then fly out, right, as he's about to kick the ball to block it because he's so close to him, or at least stay square onto him. And he kind of just, I don't know whether he gives up or he just turns his body a little bit, so it doesn't look great at all from that point of view.
But for the instance where, I think it was Ashley Barnes again, where he came at him, Pickford made the decision to come out straight away then, didn't he?
Yeah, I mean, when you talk about whether it's the right decision or not, it's not always the outcome that decides it. I know a lot of people have been saying, well, he scored, so therefore it's the wrong decision. It doesn't always determine whether it's a good decision or not. But the fact is that you don't know whether, if he did come out, Ashley Barnes might just get a touch on the ball and exactly, it was taking it past him as well. So for me, it's not a huge mistake by him to not come for the ball. I think the mistakes were made just after that.
Pickford made a fair few decent saves in that game. The one that a lot of people are talking about, which is in our Save of the Week poll, which we'll talk about later, is the save from the corner, where the amount of tweets, of videos that went round. It was quite Schmeichel-esque, I think. Would you say that?
Yeah, I think that as much as the save was great as well, I think it's just the fact that you appreciate the little bits that go into making the save, and the fact when the ball came across to Ashley Barnes, he sort of retreated in the right position. He didn't panic. He didn't look as if he was relaxed in all of his movements as well, and he got himself in a good position to be able to make the save. And the fact is that when it crossed to his right, it's not the fact he saved it that he's getting well out of the danger area as well.
Yeah.
Really strong arm.
It was a really strong arm, wasn't it? Because it went out for a corner. That's the thing with Pickford. When he does make his saves, they are, he's got strong wrists, he's got strong arms. There's no poppadoms.
But that's one of the things that when he was at Sunderland, they had to work hard on him because he was enthusiastic and he wanted to train all the time, and maybe he's training too much, but maybe he wasn't doing the right training or left himself off the pitch, and they had to keep on top of him to sort of get him in the right shape as well. Right. You can see him, he's maybe not the same physique as you see like David De Gea, maybe he doesn't look as athletic as other goalkeepers, so he's going to have to, watch what he eats and take care of himself.
So a question for you. If you're a goalkeeper and you're not quite as strong with your hands, so as you say, Pickford has obviously worked on this, how do you build the strength in your wrists and your hands to be able to make more meaty saves?
Well, I think it's different now than when I first started, because we just thrown in a gym and then just you throw a few weights about, and it wasn't as structured as now. Kids from 14, once you go into academies, they're given programs, they've got a better knowledge of what they're doing in the gym, and barbell exercise and dumbbell exercise that you do for to to get stronger wrists. But I think it's more of a holistic way of looking at it. So you're having to build an all round sort of strength rather than just focusing on certain individual areas.
Yeah, and is it something that you work on the training ground with just get pushing those balls away or?
Yeah, I think you build up a certain sort of a certain level of strength by doing it that way. I mean, I had a particular weakness in my wrists.
Did you?
And I had to do a lot of work on them simply because I broke them quite a few times.
Right.
I've got pins in my wrists as well and off breaks that weren't healing. So it was important for me to strengthen those as well.
Nick Pope, some decent saves. A lot of people. So Nick Pope is kind of he's been on the radar for a little while. But for the people that don't know him about Nick Pope, just a few facts about Nick Pope. 6'3", from Soham in England. Youth career was at Ipswich. But then he's gone around the houses a little bit. He's done his time. He spent 3 years at Bury Town. He then spent 5 years at Charlton Athletic. I don't know, a lot of Charlton fans were sad to see him go. But then he went out on loan whilst at Charlton. He went to Harrow, Borough, Welling United twice, Cambridge United, Aldershot, York City and Bury. So he's done his fair share. He's kind of cemented his place in the side at the moment. We chatted about it, whether, when Tom Heaton comes back, what will happen. Deitch's obviously then got a nice headache. So he's obviously on a lot of people's radars. At the game this weekend, Gareth Southgate was there watching, and I presume he's watching both keepers. A nice little advert for English goalkeepers. We'll talk about that later on in the game. If you are Gareth Southgate and you are looking at Jordan Pickford and you're saying, right, take that Everton defence away and you're putting in a different England defence, more sturdier, where Pickford is probably more likely to have less shots to face, are you looking at him being more of a complete keeper?
Well, I think all England goalkeepers, you can see that they'll be moving from one side where they're going to have a lot to do and they're defensively not great, and they're moving into an England side where they are going to be, they're better defenders in front of them.
Yeah.
So it's a total different mindset for all of them, really. I think that, especially with Jordan, It's so important for him to get more experience at that level, and I think that's where you're going. Gareth Southgate is going to judge who he's going to play in the World Cup. It's not going to be on really what they've done at the clubs this season, because especially Jack and Jordan, they're starting to play well now despite the defensive records. And I think it's a big problem for him now because he's got I don't know how many games there is, how many England games there will be until the very first. Game the World Cup. So what does he do? Does he sort of nail his colours to the mast and sort of say, right, this is going to be my keep, I'm going to give these six games? Does he give them three each?
Yeah.
Because neither of them have got a lot of experience at this level. And regardless of how many games are played at club level, it is going into tournament site, it's a different kettle of fish. But they have got tournament experience at youth level, so I mean that's a positive.
Well, let's talk about that later on, because I do want to talk about the England goalkeepers and who is in the picture for it. Let's move on to the next game that we'd like to chat about: Liverpool 2, Newcastle United 0. Now, Dubravka, we were chatting about him last week, about him being a good goalkeeper that has come into the Premier League. Not many people knew about him. At the opposite end of the pitch, there was Karius. A lot of people know about him, and he's become Liverpool's first choice at the moment. Both had decent games. Like, Dubravka had to be switched on at the beginning. I think it was from that Salah shot that was a pop shot. Didn't really expect it, but he was switched on and he was over to save it. And then, speaking of saves, there was that Karius save, which was an absolute worldly, isn't it?
Yeah, he's the army is sort of well-struck shot, sort of bent round him, and there's a great shot from behind the goal of him saving it, and it just looks absolutely beautiful. And the thing is about Karius' performances since he's come back on the side, it's the fact that he's making saves, but he's making saves in important times. He's making saves when the scores are level or whether they're just ahead to keep him in the side. And the timing of that as well, because it was just before half-time, because being a totally different team talk for Jurgen Klopp at half time, and he's made it easy for his manager just to say, keep on doing what you're doing, because it would have lifted Newcastle as well, and it just so many factors around it rather than just being a good save.
You mentioned it last week that Dubravka made that save against Man United at 0-0, which kind of made St James Park go wild. That must be a thing, though. If it's at 0-0 or your team's 1-0 up and you make an important save, that must be great for not just yourself but also the team. You must have seen that in the past.
Yeah, and I mean, same with Dubravka being new to the side, and he hasn't got a build up a relationship with the rest of his players. Karius, he's been there 18 months now, and whether he's built up the trust in trainers, different. It's about building up trust in games, and that's where you get the real sort of building the relationship there, and that's what he's got to do. He's got to earn sort of the trust of the people in front of him, and it is about trusting in each other.
Of course,
regardless of how good you think each other are, yeah, and that trust comes from making important saves at important times. So if you can be given credit for likes what John Pickford's done at Sunderland last season, when he's keeping the score down more than anything else.
Of course,
at times. But if you're being as important to the side as Salah, Firmino, Mane, then it's kind of, like I said, you're building that relationship it spreads confidence throughout the team, and it's about the relationship between the defenders and the goalkeeper, knowing what each other's going to do. So you're not waiting for something to happen. You're kind of predicting in your head, thinking, well, this situation's going to happen. I know what he might do here, and it allows you to be able to predict what's going to happen in front of you.
Liverpool haven't really had a steady number one goalkeeper since Reina. Obviously, Mignolet came in 2013. 2013, he was brought in because they thought that Reina was going to go to Barcelona. And Mignolet, I was looking at the stats of the weekend. I mean, it's quite surprising that you're going, Craig, he's been here since, what, 2013? And he hasn't really won the hearts of the Liverpool fans at all. Whereas Karius, I mean, I don't want to speak too soon, but some of the stuff he's doing, obviously he comes in for heavy criticism. I mean, he's not exactly perfect and he's made a few fumbles and stuff, but you do think that he is making his mark and saying, look, I'm having this number one spot and you have to fight me for it.
And I think people are probably going to give him more credit now because he's had the start that he has.
Yeah.
And people will say, I mean, it's difficult to put him in the same bracket as David De Gea, but obviously he had his difficult start when he first came to Manchester United. And to come back from that, it takes great mental strength. Now, looking at Karius off the pitch, he doesn't look unconfident at all. He looks a very confident character. And I think that's, regardless of what happens in the summer, the Liverpool are going to have a very good goalkeeper on the hands. From what I know, though, it looks as if they're still going to pull out all the stops to bring Alisson in.
Really?
Yeah, so they had a short list of keepers, Jack Butland being one of them. And but I think they will put everything they can into getting Alisson. Now, they might deny it. The club will deny it, and they don't want Karius' confidence to take hit by looking over his shoulder, because I think that's what's given the confidence now, the fact that it can work both ways with goalkeepers. If you've got two very competitive goalkeepers who are doing well, they can push each other on to even higher sort of performances and higher standards. When you've got two goalkeepers who are unsure of each other and they're not playing, they're not in great form, like Mignolet and Karius weren't, it can be detrimental to both of them because the pressure does get to you, and like I said, it doesn't help. So the situation he's in at the moment, the fact that he's just concentrating on playing, not looking over his shoulder, it's working for him. But like I said, I think if they can, they'll bring Alisson in the summer.
But Alisson, will he be first choice for Brazil in the summer?
Well, he's first choice at the moment, so, and he's not doing anything that would suggest that he needs to be taken out there. I think they're so lucky in the situation in Brazil, because for a long time it was seen as like, yeah, whoever was left over in the squad, they would go and go, like, do you know what I mean?
Exactly.
And then sort of kind of from Taffarel onwards, they've Julio Cesar, Dida, they've just produced really good
goalkeepers. They've got amazing goalkeepers at the moment. They've got Alisson, they've got Cassio, and they've also got Edison.
Yeah.
And Edison's going to be one who'll be knocking on that door. He'll want to play at the World Cup. And the season that he's had, you kind of think, well, what more has he got to do apart from give Alisson like a dodgy lasagna or something? But, Alisson, he's going to go to the World Cup. He's going to have a good World Cup if he does play. and that'll put him in the shop window, so his value will go up. Will Liverpool be able to afford it? Obviously, they've got a lot of money that's coming from Coutinho. But it will be interesting to see what does happen.
There's one good thing. It was Alex Mansfield, writer for or analyst for FB Whispers. He did a few stats on how important Karius has been to Liverpool, and of his last 16 saves, eight. This is before the game,
right?
The weekend. Eight have come when Liverpool have a one-goal lead. Five come with the scores tied, and one has come with Liverpool a goal, down by a goal. And two have come with Liverpool up by two. So 14 out of those 16 saves have come when the result's in the balance.
Wow.
And it's, like I said, I love great saves, I love flamboyant saves, but the best saves are the ones that win you points or save a result, and that's what exactly what he's doing at the minute.
Karius, he's obviously German. Whether he'll be playing... basically, he won't. It doesn't look like he's going to be playing the World Cup this season because this tournament. Crikey, who am I? Because you've got Ter Stegen, you've got Leno, and you've got Trapp. Now, Ter Stegen, very much that is his place, isn't it? No one's going to be taking that off him anytime soon. And then you've got Leno. Is it Bayer Leverkusen? He's playing for Germany. He's playing in Germany, and then you've got Kevin Trapp at Paris Saint Germain. Karius isn't going to get a bit of a look in, really.
And when you've got, well, it'd be interesting to what happens with Manuel Neuer, because he's been struggling with his foot injury for a long time now. And you would think as long as he can get fit before the end of the season, then obviously he'll be the number one as well. So, you know, there's four goalkeepers who are... They're performing at the top of the game as well, you know, and it'd be harder to see Karius breaking into that now.
Absolutely. Let's look to the next game. Brighton Hove Albion 2, Arsenal 1. Now, it has not been it's not been great for Arsenal fans for the last... They haven't won the last four games, beaten twice by Man City. Obviously, they had Östersund. And then you'd have thought, if Wenger needs to win any hearts back, it's against Brighton, but they go 2-0 down in the first half, and not a great game for Petr Cech.
No, it wasn't, and he came up and tweeted afterwards that if a team like Arsenal are going to win a game away from home in the Premier League, that they've, you know, the goalkeeper's got to save those two goals, and I've got a little bit of sympathy with him, but the first goal, great ball to the back post, and you've got Lewis Dunk coming in at the back here. And it's difficult in those situations. I always say that if you can master taking balls in the far area of your goal, then you've mastered crossing, because everything, you know, it's easy to come and take nice floater balls into the middle, things at near post where you can really come and attack with momentum. But if you can master taking those balls at the back stick, then you've mastered crosses. And in this situation, I think he was right to come for it. The ball was there to come for. I know some people have said that, well, you know, he might have been better off just staying on his line and then dealing with the second ball. I think most goalkeepers, there's enough air on the ball, they would come for that. They would come for that cross.
But he was nowhere near it, though. At the crunch point, when he goes up to get it, there's three people in, I think, at minimum of three people in that melee. Mm. And as the goalkeeper, being able to use his hands, he wasn't in for the win.
No, looking at it from, you know, breaking it down, you've got initially his footwork's very good. His footwork's the correct footwork. So like what normally happens when you're going into the back stick area, your front foot, so in this case his right foot, you cross it over your left.
Right.
So it's a kind of, you're going diagonally across, so into the back stick, and it should allow you, if you time it right, to be jumping off one foot and get greater momentum into your jump. What happens here is, though, he gets there a little bit too early. So as he gets there, he's got to pause a tiny bit, which means he's jumping off 2 feet. Now, what happens is there, you can't get you haven't got as much power and momentum
because
to push
no
off.
Run up.
Yeah, so like you get there and then you're doing a sort of like standing
static
jump.
Static jump.
So as he's going for the ball, he gets there too early and he's standing, and it's just a brief second, and he's jumping straight up and down off 2 feet. Now, what happens in this situation? If you're going to get challenged, you're going to get knocked easily.
Right.
If you're going to take the ball, you've got nothing to protect yourself with there. You were sitting duck basically, and especially when you've got somebody come from behind you, who's got the momentum, who's got a jump on you.
So not only that, you're at a disadvantage because you're doing the static jump, but then you've got Lewis Dunk, who's doing the, you know, who's running into it. Yeah. So he's got more momentum into that cross anyway.
Yeah, so he's got full momentum over. So as you get there, he's a 2 feet and he's square at the ball, so Petr can't see what's behind him, basically. Right. So what you do in this situation is, I've always found it's a bit like in cricket. I don't know if you play cricket.
A little bit. Well, basically wicket keeper, little fat bloke behind.
All right. So, well, if you're batsman in cricket, delivery comes down, you play the ball. Once you've struck the ball, you have to, before you run, you have to wait until it clears the first fielder.
Got you.
So it's kind of, so you know where it's going. So there's normally a shout of wait. And I always found it beneficial for me, if there was a ball coming in the box with a lot of air on the ball, I was literally saying to myself in my head, wait.
Really?
So it's similar. Because I play cricket, that's how I equate it to the same situation. So I'd say, wait. And by the time I'd said that to myself in my head, that had given me enough of a delay to be able to assess the ball properly and then attack it at the right time, so I'm not attacking it too early. Because when there's a lot of air on the ball, it's very tempting just to get yourself in position early,
yeah,
and try and take it. But it's all right if you're unopposed. But if you're being challenged by players coming on top of you, you need some forward momentum towards them to want to protect you, and two, to make sure that if you win the ball, they're not going to be knocking you and coming on the top of you. So in that situation, if he left it just a split second later, his footwork's great. He can take off with one foot. He can have his left arm up for protection, not only for protection, but for leverage against any players that's coming in towards him. So then he can lift himself higher. And then I think instead of going with two fists, he was going to try and punch away with two fists, that he just needs to help it on with one hand. So it's all like you're putting your hand over the top of the players that are coming on to you, and then you're coming over the top with the other hand, and you're basically just not even, it's just a glance.
Palming
and just
it
touch.
Out or just getting it.
Yeah, exactly.
Away
just
from get, the,
just getting
danger some, zone.
Just getting something on it. And that's the most important thing. The fact is that you've got some momentum going forward against the people that's coming against you. So then it gives you protection and it pushes. Like I said, it's kind of just to win the battle of two people going for the ball.
The second goal came in and it just went under Petr Cech. And as he rightly said, you need to be saving those, and it just wasn't his day, was it? I'm not saying that's like a lazy analysis, it wasn't his day, but you kind of just knew that was going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, it's for people who are critical of him now and saying that, I know there's a lot of Arsenal fans saying, well, he's not the same keeper he used to be. It kind of looked as if, well, he looked a little slow going down it. But the thing is, in these situations, it's not about technique, it's about stopping the ball. So I think sometimes, I don't know if we talked about it last week with the De Gea goal, where it's kind of this area between sort of like...
Yeah, the triangle.
Yeah, yeah. So like in this situation, it's sort of like between foot, hand and hip.
Yeah.
If it's going down there, it's an awkward... it's kind of an awkward space to get your hands down into. So, and that's what he's trying to be too correct and get his hands down to it, when he's been better off just sticking a leg out.
Sticking a leg out, just anything.
Just to get something behind it. And it's not about keeping the ball in that situation, just about stopping it and getting something behind.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet Plush Care, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional.
Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
The Leicester-Bournemouth game where the Bournemouth wall, just what went on with that goal. Begovic had a wall in place. He was then standing one side and Mahrez in the, 148th minute, bent it around the wall and got an equaliser. What should have happened? What happened? What are you saying about it?
Well, I've looked at this quite a few times and I know a lot of people, you're looking for people to blame. And I don't know what else they could have done. Because the wall looked like it had been set up correctly. The only thing I'd see was, I think it was Adam Smith was just off the side of the wall and he was marking, I can't remember, it might be marking Jamie Vardy, he was sort of lurking around that area. Now you could see he should have joined the wall, which might have made a difference. But if you set your wall up correctly, you've got like, you set the wall up and put the second man in line with from the end in line with the ball on the post, so that should give enough. But this is the conversation we always have about: should we have walls in this situation from this far out? Now, in this situation, I was thinking about it. It might have been better to have set the wall up further back.
Right. Okay.
Because then there's a lot of space in behind that wall. So once the ball beats the wall, there's a lot of space in behind the wall for it to bend and to come back in there in on goal. If you put the wall further back, in this situation, not only is there no space in behind the wall for the ball to move, but also the man on the end of the wall, he might be able to react because he's that far away from the ball. He might be able to react and sort of block the ball before it even gets anywhere near goal. So I was just thinking about what could have been done differently in that situation. That's why I think they could have been further back, you know, because you don't have to be 10 yards from the ball. That's just the minimum you have to be.
Yeah.
So if you're a little bit further back, and then what that does, it might give Azmi a little bit more room so he can see the ball and he can take up a more of a central position.
And as it was, he was almost blinded by it, and then
I don't think, like I said,
far too late to dive when you're seeing it when you are.
Yeah, exactly. So from where he took up the right position from where the wall is and the ball is, the wall's set up right, but like I said, there's just a lot of space in behind that wall for the ball to deviate and come back far enough to go on the goal. So there's no real blame, but I just think, what could you have done differently? So that's what maybe is what we could have done.
Let's look at walls in the future, if that's all right.
We can do that, yeah, no problem.
We can maybe get some sort of...
We can tweet up a great picture that I've got of me actually building a wall.
Like a proper brick wall?
Yeah, so when I went...
Like Winston Churchill?
Yeah, it was a lovely little pyramid. It was a beautiful little pyramid. And when I first went to Barnsley, there's a few of us, the PFA put this... a course on, so it was like, I think it was like 2 or 3 weeks of bricklaying, 3 weeks of plumbing,
right,
and 3 weeks of tiling to learn sort of like life skills.
Yeah,
I mean, I haven't a clue how to do any of those. Now, I mean, I still don't have much of a clue, to be honest.
Can you change a light bulb?
I can change a plug.
Oh, that's all right.
Yeah,
change a plug. Come on, anyone can change a plug. Right, they were the main talking points of what happened this weekend in Between the Sticks. What I do want to talk about is the England keepers. We've touched on it earlier, but I think what we should do today is set out the stall, look at the England options and the questions with those options. Obviously, Gareth Southgate was at a game this weekend. He's going to be thinking about that. So if you've got any ideas as to who he should take, tweet us in. It's at @number1podcast. It's at @no1podcast. So the options are Jordan Pickford, Jack Butland, Nick Pope, Alex McCarthy, Joe Hart, Tom Heaton, Fraser Forster, and I'm going to throw in there Ben Foster. Now, I know he's retired, but we'll come on to that in a minute. So if you're Gareth Southgate, David Priest, and you've got 10 seconds, I'm asking you to make the decision as to the three goalkeepers you take to the World Cup. Who are you going to take? The three goalkeepers, go.
Well, I'll do two versions. I'll do my version. I'll do Gareth.
Okay,
interesting. Yeah, so it has to be Pickford and Jack Butland. That's not.
So this is you.
Yeah, this is me.
Pickford and Jack Butland. Who's the third one?
Nick Pope.
Nick Pope. Okay. Now,
put your Gareth Southgate mask on, which you do have. A bit weird, but pop it on. There you go, that looks good, mate. Who are your three goalkeepers, Gareth Southgate?
Butland, Pickford and Joe Hart.
You've changed the order there just to... And is that the order you're going in?
Oh, no, well, I didn't see
doesn't
that.
Matter. Does it doesn't matter, no, okay.
Those are three.
So you think that Gareth Southgate is going to take Joe out with him?
I can't see him not taking him. One, because in his favour, he's got the experience, that's the big tournament experience, that the two younger keepers can lean on him and he can sort of, if they need any advice, and you know, he can chat to them and give them the benefit of his experience. Gareth Southgate knows he's a good pro. He's not going to be a disruptive influence.
Because that's the question that I was going to ask. If you've got someone like you, so you've got Jordan Pickford, it looks likely that he might start, and then you need a backup, so whether it be Butland or whether it be Pope. But then you've got a third choice keeper, and that third choice keeper, I mean, probably isn't going to get a look in for any game. So that goalkeeper there is there for training sessions, absolute emergencies, but also for morale. And do you think that person needs to be someone that is 100% behind number one and number two?
Yeah, in my experience, most goalkeepers, I've been very, very few occasions when I've either heard of or experienced myself where, you know, you haven't got the full backing of the other goalkeepers if you're not playing, because at the end of the day, it's not your fault that they're not playing. You know, if they've got any beef, it's with the manager.
So would you be taking Joe Hart as an option for a third choice goalkeeper, or are you taking Joe Hart as someone who's done it, who can basically give not just the goalkeepers but the whole team experience, go, look guys, in my experience you might want to consider this, or take into consideration that that might happen? Is that why you're taking Joe Hart?
There's a lot of things. There is that. There's the fact that, I don't know whether Gareth might think that he kind of owes it to him. But, I mean, at the end of the day, he played in all the qualifying games. He played part in us getting to the World Cup. So you could say that he deserves to be there because of that. But also, you've got to think about the future. Now, you might not think that Joe Hart's going to be the number one in the future. Once this World Cup's over with, it will be just Butland and Pickford who'll be vying for the number one spot. But if he doesn't take Joe Hart to the World Cup, then is that it for Joe Hart? That's what you've got to think.
Yeah.
Now, if you think that's the case and you will never need him, then it might be an easy decision. But do you really want to break that relationship with Joe Hart? And I mean, you should be worried about upsetting people, but the fact is you might need him in the future.
I guess you have to look at form. I mean, that's the one thing you have to look at, in the same way you look at strikers, midfielders, by goals and assists and other more intricate stats nowadays. You have to look at how many saves they're making and also who they're playing for, where that team are finishing. Now, this is just something that, you know, it's common knowledge, but Jordan Pickford played for Everton last year. He was in a team, Sunderland, that got relegated. Jack Butland could be in a team that is relegated this season. So those two goalkeepers that you're taking, you know, I've been in teams that have been relegated in the last 2 years. It's not worrying, but it's a bit odd, isn't it?
Yeah, but I don't think it's affected them so far.
But I'm saying if you look at someone like Brazil or Germany, who we've talked at today, those goalkeepers that they've got, they're with, you know, Ederson, third-choice goalkeeper. He won the title with Man City. Ter Stegen plays for Barcelona. You go to Brazil, you know, you've got Roma keeper and also, yeah, sorry, we took, yeah. You get what I'm saying, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, success breeds success, because if you're getting goalkeepers who are successful with the club sides, you know, that's going to translate with all players.
And if you look at, if you are in the same, you know, if you're playing England in the World Cup and you're looking at our goalkeepers, obviously you look at form going, oh, this is a good shot stopper, but you're going, well, he got relegated this season and he got relegated last season. So it doesn't, surely the mentality of the opposition is thinking, oh, we can have this then.
Mm. Yeah, but I mean, it depends. It's, if you look at from another point of view, England aren't a top, they're not a top international side. When it comes to sort of the latter stages, they are going to be the underdogs.
100%.
So, you know, if you're playing a Germany, Spain, France, or Brazil, Argentina, they are going to be the underdogs. So then, you know, well, the goalkeepers are going to be in that situation where the opposition's going to have a lot of possession and you are going to be defending a lot. So, I don't know, I might work in their favour, but I think it's all about mentality. And as long as that's the defeats and the conceding the goals aren't being too detrimental, I think they're in the stage of the career where it won't affect them. I think, you know, year on year, once, you know, if it happens with next two or three seasons, four seasons, five seasons, you're getting that sort of like losing mentality, then it can be detrimental. But the two of them, from my experience, they are strong-willed and got a great deal of confidence in themselves.
Looking at form, if the table were to be frozen and this is how all the teams were finished, the English goalkeeper that is in the highest position is Nick Pope at Burnley in seventh. He's had a good season. At the beginning of the season, you probably wouldn't have put him in the mix for 3, 4, 5 as England goalkeeper, but his head's there at the moment, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, if Tom Heaton hadn't got injured and he'd been in the same form as he'd been last year and we started this season, I'd have put him as number one.
Really?
Yeah. No doubt. Just because I think he deserves it. And I thought he deserved it towards the end of last season as well, to be honest. Because Joe wasn't playing that great at Torino, was having a great time there. And I'd have given him a couple of games, a couple of the qualifiers at the end of last season, maybe the Scotland games.
Let us know who you think should be going to the World Cup, who you think the top three are at the moment. Tweet is in at number one podcast. Were you going to say something?
Yeah, well, I was going to say, you know, you mentioned Ben Foster. I just think that he's another one who's in that situation where he's not playing on a great side.
No.
But he's as reliable as anybody these days. And I know people, I hear when people say, oh, well, someone like Ben Foster, oh, he's got a rick in them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
All goalkeepers got a rick in them. You know what I mean? I don't see him making mistakes every week that's conceding goals, you know what I mean? So it's,
and he's one of those experienced heads that you could take to the World Cup. He has retired.
Yeah.
But if you want someone that is going to be a good influence on the other two goalkeepers, then he's a good lad.
Yes, I mean, somebody mentioned on Twitter, Carson Darby. He's having a good season this year, like, you know, and he's probably one that where he was put into the England setup too early in that Croatia game, and it ended up costing him.
Yeah,
not just his England career, but sort of probably set him back a little bit.
I find it quite interesting that every England goalkeeper that has even been on the bench is now kind of like going, "Oh, you could talk, you know." But he's an interesting point. As I say, tweet is in at number one podcast. Whilst we're on the subject of goalkeepers, at the moment, the youngest goalkeeper in the Premier League is Jordan Pickford. He is 23 years old, 5 months, and at the moment, 5 days. The next youngest goalkeeper in the Premier League is Edison.
Mm-hmm.
23 years old as well. Then Karius, 24. Jack Butland, 24. Thibaut Courtois, 25, even though he looks like he's 43 and has 19 children. The question we asked at the beginning of the podcast, who is the youngest goalkeeper to play in the Premier League? So according to transfermarkt.com, which is where we get all our stats from, the youngest goalkeeper to play in the Premier League was Neil Finn. He was 17 years old and 3 days when he made his debut for West Ham. He only made one appearance, and that was the appearance that everyone talks about. When I say everyone, his family. He was a product of the West Ham Youth Academy and began his professional career as a trainee in August 1995. After just 3 reserve games, he became the then youngest player ever to appear in a Premier League match on New Year's Day in 1996 against Manchester City, when first choice goalkeeper Ludek McCloskey was suspended and Les Seely, God bless his soul, was injured. So there you go, a nice little fact for you. Right, let's look at save of the weekend. We gave you the 4 options: Karius from Diarmi, Pickford from Barnes, McCarthy from Ndiaye, or Azpilicueta's clearance. With 51% of the votes, it is Karius. Performance of the week, David, who are you going to go for? That's my accent that you do. He's on the RNA, he's looking at his own. So you've got a lot of notes, mate. We've put a lot of work into this podcast. You've got at least 3.
I know, you wouldn't think so.
No, you wouldn't think so. No, mate, just 2 bumbling minutes in a room in North London. But you've got about, I'd say, 4 to 5 pages of notes there. Not only that, you've got them in different colours.
colours as well. You could clearly get one of those pens with the four different... Yeah, he has. There it is.
But you know what? These are one of the greatest inventions ever.
That's a big claim.
Yeah, and I think it is. And I'm obsessed with them. I've got...
All right.
I tell you what, whilst you're looking for performance of the week, we will reveal who has won the FIFA 18 game. So I'm going to competitionagency.com/tweet draw. I'm typing in... At number one podcast, we're going to pick a random follower, and that random follower is Graham. Graham, let's have a look at your Twitter account. It is at GrahamC87. He's a B licensed GK coach for FA Wales. Ooh, 18's Bangor City FC, first team ex Everton and Tranmere, sponsored by Peak Sports UK. I mean, there's a lot of handles in there. Graham, we'll DM you. You have got a copy of FIFA 18. Well done, and thank you for taking part in that. We need to clear up because we've got to get out of the studio in 2 minutes. We recommend the book Glove Story by Rob Stokes, Derek Hammond and Gary Silk. We're not being sponsored to say this. All the money goes to Willow Foundation, charity set up by Bob Wilson. It's a cracking book. Are you in it?
I am in it, yeah.
I'm in it as well.
Yeah, beautiful.
Yeah, it's a lovely book. We'll talk about that more.
So despite that, it is worth getting.
It is worth getting. It is. I'm going to say, how many pages is it? It's like, it's 145 pages all about goalkeeping. Goalkeepers absolutely love it. We'll give it a little retweet and you are in with the chance of winning a book in the future. Just quickly... Andrew Weeks at Educated Idiot says, question for the pod, does padding on sleeves of shirts or on shorts make any difference? Now, I asked this beforehand and you said, you don't really, it's not really...
No.
You're not really bothered, are you?
I wasn't really bothered. I mean, it's kind of developed where there was like using Kevlar, like bulletproof stuff, like, you know, I mean, it is worth it. But to me, the thing that it was like a revolutionized goalkeeping, I mean, for me,
pens, four color pens.
From four color pens, was like
trousers,
trousers, yeah, pants,
lycra trousers,
yeah,
for goalkeeping,
yeah.
So instead of the jogging pants, instead of the
just general one,
Paddy Kenny joggy pants,
yeah, because they're just, I mean, one that kept you warm,
yeah.
And two, just stop me getting from loads of, like, in pre-season you used to get a lot of like horrible grass burns and grazes.
Classic. That
like, once you got them, you had them for like 3 months because obviously you just kept knocking the top off them every time you dived. And so like lycra pants and snoods.
Snoods?
Honestly.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, mate. I thought keepers were manly.
No.
No,
I mean, when you're playing in minus 14 conditions, well, like,
in Lincoln,
in Lincoln, yeah, and but those are two things that revolutionised goalkeeping for me.
Have you got a performance of the week?
I have, yes. You know what? We haven't really talked about it, but I'm going to say Jack Butland, yeah, because he made three or four very good saves, and not only that, it's the fact that he come back from that mistake last week. Went on to have a good game after that mistake. It didn't let it affect him. But it's so important in goalkeeping that if you make a mistake or you have a bad performance, the most important thing is that you don't have a bad game the next game and don't do it the next week.
And he came back.
Yeah, and more than that, he played very well in three or four great saves. So I'm going to say Jack Butland.
So Jack, if you're listening, congratulations. You've won our performance of the week. A lot of goalkeepers are listening. That's the great thing. We've got to go because with this studio, we're being kicked out of because we've been in here far too long. Do tweet us in. It's at number one podcast, at NO1 podcast. It looks like no one podcast, but whatever. If you've enjoyed it, please do give us a review on iTunes. You've been throwing them in and absolutely lovely. So just do it. Give us a nice little 5-star review. Write us in and just tweet us in. Come and see us in person. Follow us, whatever.
Yeah, and if, like I said, if there's anything that you think we've missed or there's anything you want covering, then don't hesitate to tweet us and just get in touch and we'll end up.
Yeah, we're going to have guests. We are going to have guests, but I think what we're going to do, we're going to keep this as the main podcast to talk about stuff from the weekend, and then we will have special podcasts where we bring in guests. We're still early days, so any suggestions that you want us to talk about on the podcast, please do tweet us in. You're our family, and we bloody cared about you. Anything else to add, David Priest?
No, that's everything I think for this week.
Okay, well, listen, thank you very much for listening. We love you all very much. Stay safe, put your snood on, go and get yourself a four-coloured pen and some lycra trousers. David, say goodbye to all your friends.
Goodbye, all my friends.
Cheers, goodbye.
Hold up. Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.